Longing for the Ancient Way. Talk number 4. So liberation and awakening can only be found in this moment. But this moment can't be found. It's ephemeral. As soon as we try to say, this moment, it's gone. As soon as we try to say now, it's already passed. And that endless flow is the nature of life. As human beings, we keep trying to come to conclusions. Keep trying to pin ideas down. We keep trying to figure out where we're at. We keep trying to conclude things about our mind state. Oh, my mind state is so and so, and therefore, my legs feel such and such, and therefore, I have this situation, and therefore. And that therefore is the conclusion that we keep trying to leap over, or leap to. And we come to conclusions because we think if we really have concluded something, if we really understand something in that same way, we got a hold on it. Got something fixed. But no matter how hard we try to conclude or to grasp or to get a hold of things, everything slips through our fingers like water. And actually the definition of dukkha, of grasping, is in a way trying to grasp water, trying all our might to get our hands around water, trying with all our might to put the water in the box of our hands and hang on to it. Always disappears. So one of the ways of not making ourselves suffer is to acknowledge this truth. And of course, it's relevant right here and right now. It's relevant during Sesshin. It's relevant to our state of mind. Every Sesshin, we all do this. We look for some experience we don't have, hoping we'll get that one. Or we cling to some experience we do have, hoping we'll keep that one. We're trying to get rid of some experience that we have, thinking that if we get rid of it, then we'll have some relief. It will change. So the foundation of Sesshin practice is paying attention and accepting that the way things are right this moment, the experience that we each have right this moment, right here, right now, is what it is, completely ephemeral. We don't need to make any conclusion about it. It doesn't matter whether we have a great awakening, we don't have to conclude that we are now a Buddha. It doesn't matter if we end up in the pits of hell, we don't have to conclude that we're a failure. There is no conclusion that we need to make. And of course, socially, it's awkward because somebody says, how are you doing? And they immediately say, oh, good. Oh, okay. Which is a kind of conclusion, even though it doesn't mean anything. So there is a fear that each of us has. And the fear is, what if I actually accepted this situation, this incomplete, inadequate situation, this unsatisfying situation? What if I actually accepted this pain? What if I actually accepted this state of mind and said, well, that's the way it is? What do I do? Do I resign myself to misery? Do I resign myself to say, well, it's hopeless? That's not acceptance. That's resignation. And nowhere in the Dharma is about resignation. So no matter what kind of brokenness we happen to face, or inadequacy or weakness, accepting and resigning ourselves to it are two different things. If we accept it, it will change. If we resign ourselves to it, it's a fixed view that we then try to hold on to. Oh yeah, look at me, a miserable failure. And then we start operating out of that. No conclusion. In fact, one of the essential hallmarks or criterion for wisdom is not getting stuck. One of the Zen phrases, or one of the teachers who comes to the monastery periodically, would say that the quality of a mature Zen person is the ability to turn on a dime. We're going in this way, and suddenly the situation changes, and we have to go this way, and the situation changes, and we have to go this way, without losing our center. Chaos, of course, is we just flop back and forth. But without losing our center, to respond to circumstances as they appear. And sometimes we think we're going down one road, and suddenly we find out, oh, not the right road, I have to go this way, we go down that road. The ability to be flexible and to respond to circumstances without making a conclusion. The other thing about that happens when we end up with difficult states, it's important to move towards them, not to run away from them. And we all have that inclination to something we don't like, let me get away from it. Something that's causing me problems, let me get away from it. Something I'm dissatisfied with, you know, Hogan is talking way too long, I wish you'd end. Let me get away from it. This sitting period is way too long, let me get away from it. This retreat, this life, this relationship, this job. And that is the worldly way. That is the ordinary mind. But the Dharma mind is, look into things. Look into it. I experience a particular thing of dissatisfaction or restlessness or boredom or even excitement and joy. Without analyzing it, to enter into it, to go closer to it. Dan Brown, when he's here, talks about intensifying. And intensifying in the sense of, I want to look more intimately, like looking at a painting. You want to look at a painting really carefully, you get right up close to the painting so you can see the brush strokes. Not, I'm going to now strain all my muscles. So the teachings of liberation, the teachings of freedom, are move towards. Become closer. The other thing that happens when we encounter some challenge, whatever it may be, is that challenge itself is a doorway. That challenge itself is an opening, an entrance gate into something really interesting. The challenge is the doorway that's right in the midst of our trouble. And how do we enter that doorway? How do we open the doorway? How do we see the jewel that's there, the wisdom that's there? Well, we pay attention. The healing elixir of Dharma is attention. Looking closely, looking into. But to look into something, we have to also accept it. So acceptance and looking into are, in a way, two sides of the same thing. If we don't accept that something is, we can't actually investigate it. On the other hand, even if we accept something and we're not actually looking into it, it's a kind of resignation. So whatever you're experiencing in Sesshin, whatever you're experiencing right now, this breath, this emotion, this thought, this pain, this situation, in itself it's changing, flowing. It will be different in a few minutes. But whatever it is, to look closely, intimately, to be one with, as they say. Now, another challenge, another cognitive error, which people make, you know, maybe a day or so down the line, is they say, okay, I've made a conclusion, here's the way things are, and it's going to be that way forever, and this is going to be the outcome, and I may as well give up now because that's what the outcome is going to be. And they have taken some experience and projected it into the future, thinking, oh, this is the way it's always going to be. Oh, I'm going to feel this way later. Oh, I'm going to have this same experience under a different circumstance. Oh, woe is me. I mean, in a way, it's the hallmark of depression. Somebody gets depressed, we go into a dark place, and our mind becomes very cloudy, and we can't really see beyond that, and we think this is the way it's always going to be. And then we project our depressed mood onto everything and everybody, and everything looks hopeless and dark. We do that in different ways all the time. When we're in Sesshin, we never know what's going to come. We never know what the next period will bring. We never know. If we have some fixed idea, oh yeah, same old, more of the same, more of the same, well, often we get more of the same. But when our mind is simply focused on the practice and we're intimately engaged with the practice and it's a mystery, we don't know, then interesting things happen. Interesting things may reveal themselves, not when we expect it, because we don't know. In a way, if we think about knowing, all we really know is that this situation is going to change, and I'm going to die. You really boiled knowing down to those two things. And we're not even sure what death is or what life is, actually. What is it that's alive in you right now? You can't make a conclusion about that. When people are asked these kind of questions, you know, what is the meaning of your life? What is the essence of your life? What is it that's alive? Because of our ordinary way of thinking, we think, oh, I've got to make a conclusion. I've got to come to some package. I've got to understand something I can put in a box, and then I'll give you my answer. What is it that's alive is not packageable. And so part of the answer to that question is our own vivid experience. And how do we present our own vivid experience of what is it that's alive? And everybody can do that. So, in essence, pay attention in case you haven't heard that before. Liberation is found right now. Things are always flowing. Because they're always flowing, you cannot cling, so don't try. Future is unknown, so don't have any fixed conclusions. And with that foundation, just steadily, 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 we practice attention, practice mindfulness. Jizo Bodhisattva's attributes of confidence and no fear is not based upon, I got it all down, I got it fixed, I got it put in a box. It's based upon, oh, there's always a possibility. In a way, that's what the Heart Sutra is about, that we chant every day. The Heart Sutra is about things are always coming out of the great mystery. And therefore, we have reason to be open to possibility, to hope. As human beings, we need hope. We need that feeling of growth and awakening that is possible. It's important. Now, if we're hoping for a new Land Rover, that might not be quite so useful. But to have hope for liberation, to have hope that the mind's clarity can be seen, that's a very nice, and that's a direction, that's more of a vow, that's a pointing rather than a getting. So in a way we could say that's all a teisho really is. It's just a few words trying to encourage and support you to keep going, to have faith in your own capacity for wisdom. Your own capacity for wisdom. And all of the Buddha's teachings, all of the Dharma, says you, just like you are, in this moment, have capacity far beyond the conclusion that you've already made about yourself. That the conclusions that we've made already have stuck us in a small box. It's true we have our particular DNA, and the great mysterious life energy is going to be coming through our particular DNA. That's the way it is. But what that's going to look like, how that will be revealed, we don't know. And this is not a matter of age. This is not a matter of productivity, although it may be very productive. Yesterday, Jogen spoke about, he read from the Komyo Zo Zanmai, the Divine Light Samadhi. And the Divine Light Samadhi was written in the 1200s by Koen Ajo Zenji. And Koen Ajo Zenji was a primary disciple of Dogen Zenji. And Dogen Zenji is a famous teacher, scholar, writer, and he's the founder of our particular tradition of Zen Buddhism. And in the Zen Buddhist terrain that comes through Japan, he is a pivotal, Dogen Zenji is a pivotal figure. And his student, Koen Ajo, had a was obviously a person of deep realization. Here's the words that Jogen said from Koen Ajo. I sincerely offer these words of advice to those who wish to truly practice. That is all of us. You wouldn't come to Sesshin if you didn't want to truly practice. Do not be pulled around by states of mind or objects. It's pretty simple. Don't make any conclusions. That's all it means. It's all going to change. So just keep paying attention. Just keep paying attention. Keep paying attention as things flow through. Don't be pulled around thinking, finally got that one, and it drags us off. Don't be pulled around. We were talking about turning on a dime and going, you know, this way and changing circumstances and going this way and changing circumstances and going this way and changing circumstances and going this way and changing circumstances. We maintain our center, the center of presence, of breath, the center of being anchored in our life. And this life and this body, the way this life is shaped, are, of course, not two different things. So as we respond to circumstances, as circumstances come, we remain anchored. Right here, right now, that's what we're practicing in Sesshin. We're practicing the practice of really being truly anchored, being truly present, so that whatever circumstance comes to us, we at least have some stability, so we're not blown around by our fears, by other people's fears. We're not pulled around by mind states or objects. Pretty simple. Don't rely on intellectual knowledge. Intellectual knowledge is great, you know. I mean, I love reading. I love playing with ideas. But I guarantee you, in the middle of the night, when you are sick, when your legs are really hurting, when you've lost something, someone you love, everything you understand becomes pretty useless. If you hit a deep depression, all of your understanding becomes dry, dust. So it's not saying don't use your mind, of course. Got to use your mind. It's one of the senses. It's like eyes, ears, nose, tongue. Of course. But the issue is, that is not who we are. So we're sitting here in Sesshin, and our minds are doing all the things their minds do, and some weird thought comes into the mind, you know, you're an inadequate turnip. And before you know it, we have latched onto it, said, oh, gee, it must be a part of me that's kind of vegetable, you know? And then we start getting worried. He says, just throw your body and mind into the great treasury of luminosity and don't look back. He continues, don't try to fabricate enlightenment or hide from delusion. Don't push away the arising of thoughts or crave them. Don't identify. Stably, calmly, practice zazen. Just sitting, shikantaza. If you do not propagate thoughts, they will not continue themselves. Just breathing in, just breathing out, just so. Sitting under the open sky, weightless as a flame, even if 84,000 thoughts come and go, each will display itself as the luminosity of perfect knowing if you do not hold on to them and allow them just to go their own way. This display of luminosity must not be something you experience in sitting, but in each step. This step, are all the walkings of luminosity. All through the day, be dead to personal views or fragmented thoughts. Just breathing in, breathing out, hearing, touching, without thought of separation. This is just the silent illumination of luminosity, which the body and mind are one. Thus, when someone calls you, you immediately answer. In this luminosity, usual people and sages, deluded and enlightened, are one. In the midst of impermanence, this luminosity is unobstructed. Forests, flowers, grasses, trees, humans and animals, large or small, long or short, square or round, all displaying themselves simultaneously, free of discriminating thought or intention. This is luminosity, unobstructed and impermanent. Luminosity is its own brilliance and does not depend upon your mind. That sounds very, perhaps exotic or mysterious or esoteric, or maybe you just went numb and it sounded sort of like a blur. But he's really pointing at something that's not so hard. He's really pointing at something that everybody here can taste and touch and see. He's not, you know, these are kind of different language. So those of you who have looked at on YouTube and the internet, which I assume is everybody, may have seen the videos of people who, for the first time in their lives, heard. Or may have seen the videos that people put on glasses that enable them to see color for the first time. Chosen was passing around these videos for a while. And when you watch people who first see color for the first time, or people who hear for the first time, or people who were blind and now can see, first there's often a look of amazement. Oh, big smile comes on. Big smile. And often they cry with, they're so touched by this experience. The experience of seeing color, hearing sound, seeing their beloved. It may be first accompanied by some confusion. We don't know really quite what's going on because we have no basis of operation. But amazement is one of the qualities. This luminosity that Kōnejo Zenji is talking about is something that is readily accessible to all of us. Now just imagine, we've all imagined that either you've been doing a dark retreat, sitting in the dark, or you're in a cave, or maybe you're just in a dark room at night asleep, and suddenly light comes on. This is ordinary light, maybe even a 25-watt light bulb. It startles us, it wakes us up. It's one little 25-watt light bulb will dispel all the darkness. One flashlight suddenly changes the whole cave. You crack the door open in a dark retreat and suddenly the whole world is there. It's moving. It impacts us. We might squint and look away, but anybody who's been in the dark for a while is very glad to be able to see again. And then we become accustomed to it. It becomes normal. The eye habituates. What if that very light that we're seeing then, which is the same light that we see right now, what if that light is the luminosity, is the awakened luminosity that the great teachers talk about? Right now, if we're looking in this room, everything is illuminated. Everything. There's color. There's the vivid color from the outside. There's the color of the robes in the room. And there's sound. What if that very illumination right there that you are perceiving right now is a miracle, is in itself the revelation of awakening? And that the only thing we actually have to do is to realize that. We already see. As far as I know, no one here is sight impaired. We already hear, one degree or another. What if the illumination that Torah, that Kōnejo is talking about, is this that you're seeing? And every moment you see, and every moment you can hear. Look. What if the conclusions that we have made about it, what if these fixed ideas that we have about it were actually just accretions, just dirt, just kleshas, just stuff that we've added on to the innate, pristine clarity of this light right here in this moment. Look. Look at the world right now as though it were completely revealed. Not as same old, I've seen this 1,000 times, which is a conclusion in the mind. But you look at it with fresh eyes. Fresh eyes. And that's what Zazen is about. Let's look at this breath with a fresh eye, with a fresh knowing. Let's look at this life with a fresh eye, with a fresh knowing, right here in this moment, watching the flow of it. Awakening is not someplace else. Not someplace else. We are already aware. So when we talk about awakening being not adding anything, it's not adding awareness to awareness. Awareness is already aware. But we simply do not recognize that awareness. We simply do not recognize. And so we come to do Zazen. And we keep doing Zazen by paying attention to the breath, paying attention to the floor, paying attention to the wall, paying attention to the movement of each step, and seeing it barely, nakedly, clearly, simply, and allowing it to impact us. Most of the time we have such thick walls of shoulds and oughts and mights that just cover us, that things can't actually penetrate. And so we feel this sense of separation. Oh, I'm in here, and I'm this little lump in here, and there's this whole world out there. But when that self-imposed sheet of armor begins to be taken off, and the world impacts us, and we impact the world, and the two things are not separate. The present moment is just the flow of awareness, and awareness is just the flow of all the objects and thoughts and feelings in the present moment. There is no such thing as awareness that's separate from the object that we're aware of. Awareness is the very flow of our life. This moment is nothing but the flow of our life. And everybody knows their life flows. And so, becoming aware of awareness, becoming aware of this very flow of your own life, is the entrance gate to the Dharma. We start off often with practice, with breath. I keep doing breath after 50 years. We use breath. Breath is nothing but the flow of life energy. Right here, right now. And every single person in this room, as far as I can tell, has been breathing quite successfully. If you haven't been breathing, then please let us know. So the practice of awakening, the practice of luminosity, is the practice of attention. Practice of attention. That everything is flowing through that attention. Breathing in, breathing out, hearing and touching, without thoughts of separation. This is just the silent illumination of luminosity in which body and mind are single. This is just awareness. Awareness is not divided. There's not a left awareness and a right awareness. The essence of awareness, it has no top or bottom. It has no inside or outside. It's simply awareness. Thus, when someone calls you, you immediately answer. In this luminosity, in this awareness of right here, usual people and sages, deluded and enlightened, are one. In the midst of impermanence, this luminosity is unobstructed. Forests, flowers, trees, leaves, humans, floors, altars, Buddhas, clothing, our mind are all free. They all display themselves to our awareness. With no added effort. So when we say We talk about awakening, we talk about Dharma. One teacher in one of the koans, a monk came up to him and said, what is the essence of enlightenment? And he wrote, just wrote, attention. And the monk said, yeah, I know that, I say that all the time. You know, can you give me something that's more fundamental? And he wrote, attention. Okay, said it once, said it twice, I got that. What is the essence? How can I find liberation? And he wrote, attention. 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 Anyway, all the words of the Buddhas and ancestors come down to try to inspire us to pay attention. And then, with that attentive mind, we hold in our awareness ourselves in the world. And then we hold in awareness ourselves in the world, there's a response. There's a response. It's not static. There's a constant response. And that is the essence of the Bodhisattva vow. The Bodhisattva vow that we chant every morning is based upon we are one thing. We are one awareness. And when we open our mind, we invite all these beings right here. And we offer whatever we can offer. And that offering is part of awareness itself. Part of non-discrimination. And that offering of ourself to ourself becomes practice itself. And is the road to spiritual maturity. And it's an offering, something we can do to help others. So please, take all these words simply as a way of encouraging you to have confidence. Nothing is broken. Yeah, it's true, we got a lot of work to do. You know, can't ignore that. But fundamentally, nothing is broken. And your capacity for awakening, and my capacity for awakening, and all of the great masters' capacity for awakening is exactly the same. So please, practice with that kind of confidence in the present, wholeheartedly, expecting nothing, no conclusions, just this. Just this.